Okay, so we'll go to the next slide, and I can address some of those things that Carlos raised. You want, of course, to be able to enforce your injunction if, for example, the employee is continuing to call on customers, or you find additional information, and there may be circumstances where you need to reform or modify it as well. There are cases that will impose contempt fines for violating, and even potentially jail time for non-competes. I don't think we cite those in the paper. One of the cases is a Texas Supreme Court case called Ex Parte Chambers, 1995. But this is important because if the injunction is not specific, as Carlos was saying, if the non-compete is unreasonable and you don't have a good injunction, its terms are clear, you'll have difficulty enforcing it. Following up on what Carlos said with respect to territories and customers, there are a number of cases, including those that we cite in our paper, that say that the territory where the employee worked is a reasonable territory. You can also, there are cases that say that the customers with whom the employee worked is a reasonable geographic, you know, activity scope for the non-compete. There's a case, Yoakum versus Eagle Air Freight, out of the Houston Court of Appeals, I think it was the 14th, where they listed three customers in the actual, you know, in the injunction itself. Now, of course, you're going to have clients, if you're enforcing non-competes, that don't want to put the customer names in the injunction. I've redacted those names from the order, but had unredacted injunctions that were given to the employee in some cases. But that's something you need to think about, because the reason that so many non-competes get reformed, and the reason that you never see any damage cases is because in non-competes is because the non-compete was signed 5 years ago. Now they've got new customers. Now they've got a new territory. Their job has changed, and it's, you know, there are problems with the language of the non-compete. And so you in a high number of cases, I've found, if you're trying to enforce a non-compete, you will end up having to reform the non-compete. So once you do that and you get your injunction, you need to think through how specific you need to make it so that it will be enforceable. That's one issue, is listing of customers. With respect to the nature of the activity, my view is that if you want to make sure that it's enforceable, you want to try to be as specific as you can. Now, some people, you know, I've seen non-competes and injunctions that say, you know, you can't use competitive products, or you can't, if it's a customer solicitation, that's probably less of a problem. But that's also something, if you have a salesperson with a company that is selling all types of products, that can be a big problem. And then, of course, if the injunction's not clear, and we cite some of these cases in our paper, you won't be able to get in contempt. And so that will make it much more difficult for you to get the outcome that your client wanted. Carlos, do you have anything else on scope?
Nope.
Okay, so let's talk about, I think you're this next slide.
Yeah, so now we're sort of effectively at the fork in the road, so to speak. And so what do you do now? What are the options? At this point, like Laura said to begin, a lot of serious settlement discussions often happen, particularly if there's a resolution that can be accomplished here. But a lot of times there is no resolution that can be accomplished. So the case needs to go forward. What's going to happen? Well, one obvious possibility is to appeal the ruling. So it is an accelerated appeal. I will tell you that my personal sense is that generally these are very difficult appeals to do for a variety of reasons. One is, again, if either party succeeded in getting a reasonably prompt trial setting, even though it's an accelerated appeal, it's going to be very hard to get that appellate process all the way through in time for a trial in 4 months, for instance. The flip side of that is it can also be true, which is if there is an appeal, does that encourage the case to last longer? And so is that a counter to perhaps what your interests are, the business interests in the case? And then the last thing on the appeal that I'd note is generally courts are pretty it's an abuse of discretion type standard. Courts are very deferential to trial courts most of the time, unless there's been clear error. And so they're not going to take anything. They're not going to substantially change a lot of what the trial court ruled in many instances. And unless, again, there's like a technical failure. I think technical failures are really good points for appeal. The court absolutely failed to do this or that. The trial dates are the most obvious example. We cite to the EOG versus Gutierrez case. But if there's other things that the court didn't do, didn't specifically prescribe the conduct that needs to be enjoined or give the reasons why, then perhaps you have a good technical reason for reversal. But appeal is really not it tends to be an expensive and not very satisfying remedy in many instances. So then the next thing is dissolve or reform. In other words, over time that this injunction's in place, do things change in either the facts, something comes to light during the discovery process that wasn't known?